It's Wednesday, January 19th. The country has hit a turning point, so why doesn't it feel like it? We start here. After the sharpest rise in COVID infections so far, the national numbers appear to have turned downward.
Omicron is going to peak in different times in different parts of the country.
Where the pandemic stands 1 year into the Biden presidency, aid is ready to go to islands in Tonga, the islands that are left.
All houses were destroyed on Mango Island.
Our team has arrived in Fiji as aid ships are getting ready to deploy. And did Microsoft just buy an extra life?
This makes Microsoft the biggest American gaming company now.
Why, a huge splash in gaming might be even bigger than that. From ABC News, this is Start Here. I'm Brad Milkey.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code SPOTIFY for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, something kind of wild this morning. This is the 1,000th episode of Start Here. We're going to talk more about that later in the show, but the reason I bring it up now is, in any job, you always think about what you did not expect when you started it. Well, for more than half of these 1,000 shows, we have lived in a world where a new coronavirus has been spreading around the globe.
The first case of the deadly coronavirus making its way to the U.S.
In just a few hours, a sweeping new lockdown will take effect across California.
The FDA Advisory Committee voting to recommend emergency use authorization for the first vaccine against the coronavirus.
Just in the last 4 weeks, 22 million people have filed for unemployment.
We are already experiencing a serious healthcare worker shortage.
In that time, in this country alone, we have had 67 million cases, 850,000 deaths. We've had two presidents in charge. A more transmissible variant has caused cases to go higher than ever. And yet yesterday, the final day of President Biden's first year in office, it does appear those cases are on the decline for now.
Even with this sign that cases may be declining, we've got a tough month ahead of us.
So, what should we expect going forward in perhaps a new phase of this pandemic? Let's go straight to ABC's Anne Flaherty, who covers federal agencies. Anne, has the Omicron variant just peaked in this country?
So it is easy to think that because when you look at these numbers nationwide, they are tilting down. And, you know, in cities like New York and states like Massachusetts, we are seeing signs that it is going back down.
Turning the corner. You heard it here first. I've been waiting to say that. Turning the corner. Look at the 7-day average of cases starting to decline.
And that makes a lot of sense because they were among the first to get hit. And that's a good sign because it means that the nation is going to turn a corner on this. But something to keep in mind is that there are multiple waves. Omicron is going to peak in different times in different parts of the country. So it's not over yet.
In 38 states, cases are still going up by at least 10%.
You know, we're not just watching these case numbers. We're also watching the hospitalizations and the deaths that follow this explosion of cases. You know, I was looking at these numbers from this time last year, and it's just crazy. 120,000 people were hospitalized when Biden took office. And this year, it's at 157,000. And that seems to really be for two reasons. One is we have three times as many cases a day as we did last year. Omicron is just this absolute tsunami.
Our emergency departments are overflowing. We have to care for patients in hallways, sometimes closets.
We also have tens of millions of people who haven't gotten vaccinated, and anyone unvaccinated is 17 times more likely to end up in the hospital. But, you know, by all indications, it does seem to be turning a corner that we've been waiting for. The other question I have, too, is how quickly will it fall down? Is it going to plummet very fast, or is it going to kind of level out? Those are the kind of things that we just don't know yet.
Wait, I want to know. You tell me. Is it going to plummet down, or is it going to level out?
Well, you know, this time last year when we saw cases plummet, it was because of the vaccines. We had a vaccine that was very effective at stopping transmission. This year, we don't have a vaccine that's effective at stopping transmission.
Omicron cases are rising faster than previous variants, and we are struggling to keep up.
The vaccine keeps you out of the hospital. It keeps you alive, which is very valuable. That's usually the goal of vaccines. but we're not going to be able to stop transmission with this vaccine. So it could be a slower, more gradual slope down. I think that's going to frustrate people because obviously we're really done with this pandemic. But that could mean that the hospitalizations and the death numbers that lag behind it are going to stay a little bit higher, more elevated than we'd like.
Hey, you mentioned President Biden and how he took office saying, you know, science is in charge now, right? And because we got science on our side and we're going to follow the science, we are going to get these numbers down. And yet, like you said, hospitalizations are up. So 1 year into the Biden term, what has he gotten right? What has he gotten wrong?
Right. I mean, it's really remarkable when you look back at this time last year and he was talking about having a dark winter and he vowed to overwhelm the problem.
That requires sparing no effort to fight COVID so that we can open our businesses safely, resume our lives and put this pandemic behind us.
He promised FEMA-run vaccination sites. He was going to have this World War II style push for producing more tests.
All across this nation, we can say with confidence, America is coming back together.
And of course, in July, he tried to vow that Americans would soon have independence from the virus. And of course, none of that came to fruition. He was very successful on the vaccine and the rollout of the vaccine.
Why not just make them free and give them out to and have them available everywhere?
Should we just send one to every American?
Maybe.
Then what happens if every American has one test?
Testing has been his issue. All last year, he promised to increase the production of tests, and laboratory tests are more available than they were this time last year. But it's the rapid tests that we need to go back to school, to go back to work. So I think it's fair to say that Biden was not as successful on the testing front, even if he was on the vaccination front. Now, we don't need just four tests showing up in our mailbox. We need a testing system.
We're taking additional actions, including sending 5 million free rapid tests to schools each month.
Of course, you can buy more tests through your pharmacy and ask your insurance company to get reimbursed for it. So it is becoming more available. It is becoming easier and cheaper. But I just question whether or not we have the system set up to do a real surveillance type for testing.
The CDC is recognizing that N95 and KN95 masks really represent the gold standard right now.
The CDC last week urged Americans that if they were at high risk, that they might want to consider upgrading their masks. And this is something that health experts have been talking about for a very long time with Omicron, that, you know, the cloth mask isn't going to cut it. Look for the N95s, look for the KN95s. The White House is announcing that they want to put free N95 masks in pharmacies for every American. So you can just go up to Walmart, CVS, any place that you would go to get a vaccine, and you would ask them for free N95 masks.
Wait, that's significant, Anne, that the White House is essentially saying, yeah, three N95 masks for free on us? Like, you can just walk into your Walmart or whatever and get them?
These masks are going to be shipped by the end of the week, so we're hoping that they're available by about early February. So, you know, again, you're going to have to wait, but it is a step forward. It's kind of this acknowledgement that you can't resolve this pandemic with vaccines alone. You have 62 million Americans who are eligible for the vaccine who have refused to take it. So if the rest of us are going to get on with our lives and get to work, we can't have a virus ping-ponging, you know, among us. And it has to be stopped somehow. So I think the administration is going to pay more attention this year to antiviral pills, to N95 masks, to rapid tests, and to make all of those more available to Americans in a bid to try to stop the pandemic once and for all.
Yeah, 1 year down, one pandemic still to go. Anne Flaherty, some great perspective there. Also some news you can use as far as these N95 masks being able to go into a drugstore at some point in the near future and just get your pack of three for free. Thanks, Anne.
Thanks, Brad.
Next up on Start Here, some parts of Tonga don't need aid. They need Earth to be filled back in. We go to the South Pacific after the break. This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. Have you ever wondered what you would do with an extra hour in your day? I think about this all the time. I'm like, I would be so productive. I'd exercise more, or I'd read a book, or I'd take a nap, like restore myself. We often find ourselves yearning for these extra hours, but the real question is, what would you do if you were making yourself a priority? Well, how about therapy? It can help you discover what's important so you can make the most of your time. If you've ever benefited from therapy, you know how transformative it can be. It's not just for those who have experienced major trauma. Therapy empowers you to learn positive coping skills, set boundaries, and become the best version of yourself. If you're considering starting therapy, you should give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online. It's designed to be convenient, flexible, and tailored to your schedule. You just fill out a brief questionnaire. You'll be matched with a licensed therapist. And here's the beauty of it. You can switch therapists if you're not finding the right fit. No additional charge. Take the first step. Learn to make time for what makes you happy with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/start here today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/start here. With daylight saving time upon us, we're looking forward to more daylight and longer days from March through November. And while setting our clocks forward gives us the illusion of more time, it doesn't necessarily help businesses find qualified candidates any sooner. Fear not, there is a solution. ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter is your 24/7 hiring partner working tirelessly to connect you with the right candidate. Once you post your job on ZipRecruiter, it gets distributed to over 100 job sites, ensuring you reach a diverse pool of qualified individuals. Their smart technology scans thousands of resumes, matching you with people whose skills perfectly align with your job requirements. Spring forward with a new hiring partner, ZipRecruiter, and find top talent sooner. See why 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. Just go to this exclusive web address to try ZipRecruiter for free, ZipRecruiter.com/start here. Again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/start here. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
The high tide is so big that half of the property is underwater.
Imagine the worst natural disaster your country has seen in generations. Imagine an explosion so big that chunks of your nation are just gone.
We are still waiting to receive information from Tonga of what is much needed.
But now imagine not hearing from your own government for days. That is what has been happening in Tonga over the last 72 hours after a massive volcanic eruption cut off basically every form of communication that country has.
There is still so much ash covering everything. It's still very difficult to gauge the level of destruction.
Finally, overnight, the federal government there was able to put out a paper statement calling it an unprecedented disaster, saying on some islands there are just no homes left, and warning that its internet and foreign phone lines have been completely knocked out, even as they try desperately to get foreign aid. You heard ABC's chief national correspondent Matt Gutman yesterday talking about how impactful this volcano has already been. Well, he has made his way to the South Pacific. He's watching relief efforts play out in real time. Where are you, Matt?
I'm in Fiji, Brad. We're about 500 miles away from the volcano. And folks here felt multiple shockwaves. It rattled windows. It shook houses. People I've spoken to said their kids ran inside in fright. Nobody knew what it was. They had to check the internet. That's how powerful that explosion was.
Space satellites captured an atmospheric shockwave that radiated out from the volcano at close to the speed of sound.
That shockwave circumnavigated the globe, one of the biggest explosions since 1883 and the volcanic eruption at Krakatoa. So this is a very big deal here.
What is it like for these surrounding areas like Fiji, Samoa? Are you getting a sense of what they've been going through here?
You know, there's concern of ashfall here in Fiji. There have been warnings about it. There are warnings of acid rain.
So a lot of that ash and gas will remain within the stratosphere for quite a number of weeks and possibly months and kind of circulate across the globe.
There are concerns that it will affect agriculture here and elsewhere.
This could damage crops, including staples like taro, corn, and bananas, which locals depend on.
And the biggest concern really is for the people of Tonga.
It seems that all houses were destroyed on Mango Island.
The Tongan government says that it's still trying to communicate with some of these outlying islands, but hasn't heard from them. And there are islanders in the United States who are incredibly concerned as well.
None of us have heard from anybody anytime.
I can't sleep. I just stay up and think about him.
And it is a massive humanitarian aid challenge, right? And not only because Tonga is so hard to reach on a good day. Now you have this communications blackout.
You know, jet engines, they can suck that ash in and it will shred the engine.
You have ash in the air. You have ash covering the runways.
And so they clear about 100 or 200 meters per day, I gather.
But there's also the concern from the government that if they bring aid groups in and aid workers, those people might be carrying COVID. And they've had a single COVID case in 2 years. They've basically shut themselves off from the world. So the government of Tonga not only has a massive crisis on its hands, it has a massive dilemma as well.
All right, so what's next for these aid groups? Like, how do you even approach a country when there's so little information and so much devastation?
The Australian and New Zealand governments are sending out warships laden with supplies.
A clear indication that has come from Tonga is the need for water.
Generators, water tanks. So a lot of that is going to come in via ship. The question is, how are the ports? We still don't know. Are they going to be able to intake this stuff? Again, there are so many unknowns here, and that's what makes this such an unusual disaster relief operation.
The before and after satellite images showing the island itself there, and now the after, a blizzard of ash now covering once green islands. Other images show parts of the island obliterated, now open ocean.
And something else that we're seeing from the Australian and New Zealand flybys that their air forces have been able to do is just the damage to infrastructure in the Tongan islands themselves. One of the things we haven't seen, people on the ground, Brad. Apparently people are still laying low. It's a very concerning situation there.
All right, Matt Gutman, they're in Fiji, as everyone, the entire world really, tries to get closer to these islands that at this point are just some of the missing structures entirely. Matt Gutman, thanks a lot.
Thanks, Brad.
I want to read you some of the most expensive business acquisitions in the tech world ever.
Now to a blockbuster tech deal, Facebook is expanding its empire.
So 8 years ago, Facebook bought this messaging company called WhatsApp, you might have heard of it, for $19 billion. A few years later, Microsoft bought LinkedIn for $26 billion. Right as the pandemic took hold a couple years ago, Salesforce bought the office messenger service Slack for $27 billion. These are all companies you've heard of. You can see why they might fetch a big price tag. Well, yesterday, Microsoft announced it was buying a company for $68 billion, just an absolutely bonkers price. And this was not for a revolutionary communication system or some office software across the country. This was for a video game behemoth.
Microsoft announced today it will be buying the video game giant Activision Blizzard.
Amanda Silberling is a reporter at TechCrunch. She has been reporting on the acquisition of Activision Blizzard. Amanda, let's just start from ground zero here. What is Activision Blizzard?
So even if you haven't heard of Activision Blizzard, you've probably heard of some of the games that they make. They're a huge gaming company of around 10,000 people, and they make games like World of Warcraft.
For the Alliance, let's move into sparring positions.
Call of Duty and Candy Crush.
Tasty.
Whether you're a PC gamer or a mobile gamer, you've probably played one of their games.
Watch the skies!
I think it's important you brought up that you got the big shooter games that we've heard of, but also Candy Crush. So people who might not consider themselves gamers, like if you're playing Candy Crush, you are very much a gamer in this company's eyes. But why would that all be worth $68 billion? I mean, like, I'm thinking about the biggest acquisitions. Disney, our parent company, took over 21st Century Fox. That was $70 billion. This is $68. Just absolutely gargantuan.
I think because they have just so many games that make so much money. Like, if you think about everyone making a microtransaction on Candy Crush every day, or serious World of Warcraft gamers buying World of Warcraft expansion packs.
From Microsoft's perspective, they're getting a bargain because they're going to really vastly expand their library.
This is the biggest acquisition that Microsoft has ever made. The acquisition isn't closed until 2023. So assuming all goes according to plan, this would make Microsoft the third biggest gaming company by revenue, falling behind Sony, which is a Japanese company, and Tencent, which is a Chinese company. So essentially, this makes Microsoft the biggest American gaming company now.
Wow. And so if this is a deal that's all about gaming, okay. But Microsoft CEO Satya Nadella also said this was about the metaverse. What does that, I feel like I'm a year into this and I still can't quite understand. What does that mean?
So when people talk about the metaverse, we're talking about a world that takes place through virtual reality.
In gaming, we see the metaverse as a collection of communities and individual identities anchored in strong content franchises accessible on every device.
And I think especially with Facebook rebranding to Meta, there's been a lot of attention on the metaverse lately and a lot of thought about how will tech evolve? Like, will the metaverse be something more like what Mark Zuckerberg wants it to be, which is like, we take our work meetings in the metaverse, we hang out with our friends in the metaverse.
Your home is your personal space from which you can teleport to anywhere you want.
I think most people would agree that the idea of playing a virtual reality video game for an hour sounds fun, but I don't know if people necessarily want to have a VR headset strapped on for an entire day. But I think Microsoft is basically saying, well, if we're investing this heavily in gaming, then I guess we're also going to be thinking about the metaverse. But
because like, if anyone's got kind of a lock on where the metaverse goes from here, gamers seem to have like gone there before everyone else, essentially.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's just a much more exciting use of the technology. And I think that's why we're going to see a lot of gaming companies getting into virtual reality technology. But sometimes I think metaverse is just used as a buzzword, as a what's next in tech, when virtual reality has existed for a while, and it's just something that is still growing.
Well, and so then, last question. Activision Blizzard, yes, huge deal in the gaming world. Yes, has this huge catalog. But it's also got an intense level of scrutiny and has for the last year. Like, this is not a company with no shadows upon it. How does that affect Microsoft, and how does that affect the gaming world if this deal goes through?
Right now in the gaming world, Activision Blizzard is a very besmirched name.
Activision is under fire from multiple regulatory fronts about its culture of harassment towards women.
So the company's currently being investigated by the SEC about the company's workplace culture and how its CEO, Bobby Kotick, has handled employees' allegations of sexual misconduct and workplace discrimination. Mm-hmm.
Bobby Kotick was involved over the years, knew of many allegations, including alleged rapes at one studio.
The question now is, how will this acquisition impact company culture at Activision Blizzard?
And we also recognize that after the close, we will have significant work to do in order to continue to build a culture where everyone can do their best work.
In the press release, they said that Bobby Kotick will stay as CEO, but then the Wall Street Journal has also reported that he's expected to step down once the acquisition closes, but that might not be until 2023. There have been petitions signed by over 1,000 employees calling for the CEO to resign, and to get that much traction within a big company is really startling, and I think really speaks to how badly it seems that employees want change, especially regarding how the gaming industry is historically very male dominated and has been very much described as a boys' club. And I think especially when there are so many sexual assault allegations against women at this major gaming company that then gets bought for an unprecedented amount of money by a major tech company, there's a lot of questions about how will things change or not change for the employees that work there. And the general sentiment I've seen just from Activision Blizzard employees tweeting is just generally, we'll wait and see what happens. And I think that's all we really know right now.
Yeah, the company actually settled a lawsuit over this with the federal government. They say they've now upgraded their policies and that they've created a fund to compensate people who were harassed. But you're right, when these allegations were coming out last year, Microsoft said it was taking this hard look at its relationship with Activision Blizzard. Apparently, that hard look involved the decision to buy the company for the biggest price tag in its history. Amanda Silberling from TechCrunch, thanks so much.
Yeah, thank you.
All right, we're going to take one more quick break. When we return, you learn a few things in 1,000 episodes. One last thing is next.
We've got the exclusive view behind the table. Every day, right after the show, while the topics are still hot, the ladies go deeper into the moments that make the view, the view. The Views Behind the Table podcast. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
And one last thing.
Can I use my Zoom and a potato to record? Is that okay?
Anyone who's ever tried to make a podcast knows what a challenge it can be to make one episode.
Do you hear that?
No.
I remember sometimes if it's on a different screen.
We're still learning Zoom.
This is what I'm talking about, guys.
Well, today is the 1,000th edition of Start Here. People ask me all the time how we make the show, so I figured, of all the days, this is the one to reveal some of our secrets.
I'm so used to not.
No one did that. Everyone just respectfully listened to this pitch that's never going to be in the show. Every afternoon, our stellar team of producers meets for a pitch meeting. We have an animated discussion on what stories we think will continue to dominate our attention.
All the criticism is completely accurate, but it doesn't mean that I have to like it.
From there, I retreat into my little home studio, which, yes, is an actual closet.
That is definitely my wife's faux fur coat. Thank you, Jolenta, for the soundproofing.
And that is where the show comes alive, because that is where our correspondents begin calling in from around the globe.
Dude, where are you right now exactly? Do you know?
Somewhere in the Antarctic Ocean. It's, I mean, and in the middle of a storm, which is quite disconcerting.
Sometimes it's a call from a war zone. Sometimes from a media scrum.
Hold on. I have Pelosi walking by me. Hold on.
Yeah, I'm on the line from the courthouse.
Brad, I'm sorry to interrupt you. I'm sorry I'm recording with Brad. What's going on?
Very often, it's on a weekend or a holiday.
Hey, great to be with you, Brad, and happy holidays all round.
Seems like just yesterday it was Friday.
The only thing I've eaten today is a Biscoff cookie.
But it's those conversations where I get to ask the stuff I've always wanted to ask, where you truly get to see how much expertise all of our guests bring to the table.
Thank you. Oh, wait, let me just make sure I stop my recording. And
then it's off to a long night of editing.
It's going
to
be a while for me.
Yeah, it's going to be a while for me, too.
Yeah, really.
After which we upload the pod to you. And when we started the show, that's where we thought this process would end, but it wasn't. Because what has truly made these 1,000 episodes so special is you guys, listeners.
Okay, so here are some messages from just this week. Casey Broda says, I can't believe I've listened to nearly every episode. Oh, Casey, that is fantastic.
Interactions on Twitter, Instagram, even in person. I'll never forget, at the Iowa caucuses, I ask a first-time voter if I could interview her.
Is this the podcast?
Yes, Start Here.
Yeah, let's do it every day.
And she said she was a loyal Start Here fan.
Are you recording?
Yes, of course, I'm always recording.
And it's that back and forth with listeners. Ones like Molly Hart, who wrote to tell me she catches my movie references, even if no one else does. Nick Akrofi, who says he appreciates the sound mixing. That reminds you, someone's always listening.
Nick says shout out to whoever comes up with the titles. Malcolm Exonerated, that was me. Thank you, Nick. The Gassed and the Furious, that's classic Kelly Therese right there.
So 1,000 episodes in, I'm happy to report we're still going to be focusing first on facts, clarity, and the listener. That is where we will continue to start. Just beginning to, I can't wait to see what the next 1,000 episodes can bring. I usually do this at the end of the week, but it would be silly of me not to mention the incredible team that gets this show up every morning. Our producers, Kelly Therese, Brenda Salinas Baker, Lewis Millman, Madeline Wood, David Toledo, Jen Newman, Vika Aronson, and Tara Gimbel. Our social media manager, Ariel Chester. Our podcast manager, Josh Cohan, who helped launch this entire project. And our superwoman, our executive producer, Liz Alessi. Major props to Lakia Brown, John Newman, Elizabeth Russo, and Stacia DeShee. I'm Brad Milkey. See you tomorrow for episode 1001.
Hey, I'm Andy Mitchell, a New York Times bestselling author.
And I'm Sabrina Kohlberg, a morning television producer. We're moms of toddlers and best friends of 20 years.
And we both love to talk about being parents, yes, but also pop culture.
So we're combining our two interests by talking to celebrities, writers, and fellow scholars of TV and movies.
Cinema, really.
About what we all can learn from the fictional moms we love to watch.
From ABC Audio and Good Morning America, Pop Culture Moms is out now wherever you listen to podcasts.